You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, all you art history babes.
Hi.
I didn't know
you were waiting on me to greet them as well. Hello. Hello, Babe Nation.
We have a new giveaway. We love to give stuff away when we have it to give
yes,
away.
We just have to save up to have enough stuff to give away.
When we acquire things to give away, we like to give them away. And we have a new giveaway starting today, July 17th, and running through August 17th. If you purchase an item from the Art History Babes store at arthistorybabes.com, you will be entered to win this giveaway, and that is one entry per item.
One merch equals one entry.
Exactly. So if you get five merches, if you get three coffee cups and a t-shirt and a tote bag, that's five entries.
That's five.
Five of them. So what's in the giveaway, you might ask?
Well, let us tell you.
An Art History Babe trademark t-shirt in cranberry. It is a size small, but it's kind of a big small.
Yeah, it's a roomier. You could do a lot with it.
You could. You really could.
Listen to our Ruth Ripon episode. We'll tell you all the things you could potentially do with it.
You could get DIY with it if you want. There is a necklace, a very simple black pendant necklace by a lovely listener who does handmade jewelry, Allie Bremer.
It's awesome. It's like brass and black leather. It's cool as all hell.
And then there is a print of the four of us in Berlin that was printed by our featured artist, Zach Clark. There's a crystal from the mountains of Shasta, California.
Mountains of Shasta. Oh my gosh, that's the fanciest it's ever sounded. From Mount Shasta, California, right downtown at Soul Connections.
It's a pretty magical place up in Northern California. We've got a fun crystal from there. And then last but certainly not least, a catalog from a Ruth Ripon exhibition. Mm-hmm. So if you're unfamiliar with Ruth Ripon, make sure to head over to our Ruth Ripon episode. Amazing ceramicist, and it's a really beautiful catalog with some really cool images.
Yeah.
So you can be entered to win all of those goodies. All you have to do is you got to pull the trigger on that merch you've been wanting to buy.
And you can check out our new stickers, which are very affordable.
4-pack of Art History Babe stickers. There's coffee mugs, there's t-shirts, there's tote bags, all kinds of cool stuff. And also our featured artist prints are up in our store. So a print set, a triptych by featured artist Zach Clark is available, and that also is included in this giveaway.
So buy some merch, guys. It's a win-win here.
Yeah. Check out the merch, arthistorybabes.com.
You walk away with something no matter what.
Right? You're the winner here.
We're setting you up to win.
Also, we're on YouTube. I'm just going to keep reminding you all that we are on YouTube.
In case you haven't heard.
Just dropped a new video. We're recording today. We're just trying to make all that content, podcast, YouTube. We're all over the place. So make sure you get subscribed on our YouTube. Watch those videos, like those videos. And yeah, I think that's all we got for you.
Think so.
So enjoy the show.
Enjoy.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the Art History Babe.
I would put a bunch of dirt in a cage because I had a hamster for like a minute when I was a kid. I think it died. I think it died.
It's not alive now, so
no fault of my own. But I would get earthworms and roly poly bugs, and I'd put them in like a little cage together because I'd make like a little ecosystem.
Would they
for them.
Fight to the death?
I saw like earthworms eat the shit out of so many roly poly bugs, and I would just
Wait, earthworms? Do they have like a mouth?
You know, like. I think one end is the mouth and one end is like the vagina penis because they're not gendered.
I hate it so
much. They can mate like with themselves.
Oh, it's so
that's evolution,
gnarly.
Dude. That's the future.
That is the future. When I was little,
I wish we were recording this.
We are.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Don't worry.
Midwest shit. We fireflies. You'd catch fireflies in jars and then you'd take off their little butts. And
what?
You make like
you take their butts
necklaces
off?
Out of
no
them.
No way! Yeah. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, you take off their and they.
Oh, I would have been all about that shit.
Yeah, and and they keep flashing for a long time. So you would take their little light up butts, and then you would make jewelry.
In my next life, I will be a Midwestern child wearing so much like firebug butt necklaces.
They were magical summers. They really were.
I would be like, I am Queen Maeve.
Stop it,
Queen of the Fae Folk.
The Faefo. Corey has this really awesome glass. It looks like a martini glass, but someone took off the stem, and it's just the glass part, and I think that is rad.
Yeah, I like it.
She looks really rad right now.
Fancy.
She's wearing a red top bikini and a Hawaiian-themed blue UC Berkeley, like, dad button-up. And it's really good. It's really good. I like it a lot.
To a father. It's authentic.
I like it a lot.
I am definitely, I'm feeling good about my fashion statement right now.
It's good.
It's saying a lot. While also saying a lot.
Yes.
You're saying I'm not being subtle? Is that what you're saying?
You not are also subtle. Missing the red bikini that really creates the America.
Oh, no.
I said red bikini. I gave a red bikini.
Yeah, there's a red, white,
a
blue
shout out.
Situation.
In case
right
anyone's
now.
Wondering, the bikini is red.
It's red.
There are photos on the internet.
She's on the internet.
Babe's poolside. It's a lot cleaner hashtag than you think it's going to be.
Check it out. Poolside.
Check
it
out. Hashtag Babe's poolside. Check it out for yourself.
All right.
Let's actually get into this episode.
Woo!
Wait, are we already recording?
Yeah.
No, we've been recording the whole time, but we'll do our intro.
Yeah, let's do our intro. I'm Corey.
Natalie.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Jen.
And we are the Art History Babes.
Woo! And we have a special guest today.
Zach Clark,
Mr. Zach Clark.
Back. And he is an art history babe.
We're not talking about Catholics this time.
We did talk about hella Catholics
last
time.
Oh, we got real churchy.
You know what?
Last time.
We did, but I really loved it. I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how can you talk about Karina Kent and not talk about Catholicism?
Karita.
Oh my God. Can you guys please? I'm trying so hard. We have been poolside, let me tell you. Let me tell you about how we've been poolside for like the last 2.5 hours, drinking copious amounts of whiskey and ginger ale. So good luck, everybody else.
So luck to you all.
I don't know about everyone else, but we'll be fine.
We're fine.
10,000 people just shut off.
Yeah, they were like, oh, it's going to be one of those.
Today, we've got a couple of episodes planned, but this one is about Robert Rauschenberg. And
Bah Rausch. Oh my God, it's windy out here.
Bee Rausch.
We're recording outside.
We're on the beach. On the beach.
Yeah.
Now, we're actually here right now while Coachella is happening. Beyonce is probably like getting ready to take the stage with her 100 backup dancers.
That Walmart kid is yodeling.
Oh, yeah.
What? I never saw the video. Oh, I just feel outrage about the yodeling kid.
I haven't heard anything about this.
Keep it that way.
I've only heard the remixes. There's a really good Cholo remix. I love it. It's really good.
It's a meme of this young skinny boy yodeling in a Walmart.
He's like, oh, no. What else? What does he say?
Like,
I don't remember.
Yodel, yodel, yodel? Like, what
he
do you
yodels,
say?
Like, it really, like, he's good at it.
He is
very good at,
good
at yodeling. Yeah.
Like, how? Okay.
God damn it. That's I know. It's hard. It's hard. We try to stay on top of these things, but we just can't.
Okay, so I have a feeling this episode's probably going to go in all sorts of tangents anyway, so let's just jump in.
Let's jump in.
Robert Rauschenberg.
We're talking about Robert Rausch.
Arouche, B-Roush, whatever.
B-Roush.
B-Roush.
That's pretty good. That's good.
Broush.
We should name the episode Broush, dude. Broush.
Zach is shaking his head and rubbing his forehead and temples.
He says
simultaneously.
No.
He is making a no motion across his throat.
We are not starting over.
It's, yeah.
We don't do that, Zach.
No.
That doesn't happen here.
We're talking about Broush.
Hieronymus Broush?
Dude, it's good.
Hieronymus Broush.
Been there, done that.
Bruh. We're talking about Broush.
Yeah, you should check out our Hieronymus Bosch episode. It's out there.
It's really
check
good.
It out.
Also, Robert Rauschenberg.
Yeah. All right. So
he's not going anywhere.
No.
He was born October 22nd, 1925.
Oh, I didn't realize he was Libra.
He was a Libra.
Yeah, that's cuspy, isn't it? Isn't that Libra? Scorpio?
It's almost Scorpio. Yep. I think, is that considered
that's a good cusp?
Is that cusp? Okay.
21 through 23.
Oh, cusp.
That's a good cusp. It's a good cusp.
Cusp.
He died May 12th, 2008.
No.
That's a good day to die.
It's like polar opposite reaction.
No.
No, we didn't. That's wrong.
We're successfully making another episode I can't tell my students about.
Stop it.
Stop it.
You guys, stop it.
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm like, was that? Did you not know he was dead? Or like, what?
I don't know. I don't
what was the genesis of that reaction?
I just didn't want him to die.
I just didn't want him to die,
dude.
Oh my god.
I wanted him to be alive.
Well, he's dead.
I'm sorry.
I wanted him to be alive.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
Oh my god.
All right, okay, back on track. We're going to get back on track. All right, so Robert Rauschenberg was a very important name throughout modernism, from abstract expressionism into the world of pop art. He worked in various mediums. He was strongly influenced by Duchamp.
Nice.
He, I think, first came across Duchamp in like the 1950s, and the concept of the ready-mades by Duchamp would lead to what are known as Rauschenberg's combines, which we'll get into a little bit more, but his combines are hardcore mixed media work. He would combine found object with abstract painting or collage to create something that was super multimedia. And while that, I think, is fairly common contemporarily, he was one of the first people to be doing that. One of the things he is most well known for is the erased de Kooning, which we'll talk about in detail a little bit more as well, in which he erased a de Kooning drawing. Willem de Kooning at the time was like a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Like he was selling for more money than like anyone else in the abstract expressionist movement was selling for. Like he was a big deal at that moment. And Rauschenberg was like, I'm gonna erase this shit. In his early years, he actually studied pharmacy for a while, pharmaceuticals.
Wow.
And then he served in the Navy.
What?
Yeah. And
my grandpa was in the Navy.
Maybe they knew each other.
Rauschenberg and Ginny's grandpa.
Ed Van Dyne. Thank
you for your service.
Name.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, Ed.
And he had like polio as a young child,
no.
So he was like
Jesus.
Partially crippled
so he's like
on
FDR.
One side. Yeah.
And he's still
greatest
serving
American
the
president.
Navy. Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, Ed.
We'll do a separate podcast about
about Ed Van Dyne.
About Ed.
I would love to be on
if we
our
get
History
through,
Babes FDR episode.
If we get through this podcast episode, we will do an episode on Mr. Ed Van Dyne.
Ed Van Dyne and FDR. Yeah.
Okay.
Hot takes. FDR.
All right. He was in the Navy for a while, and then after his time served, he came out and was looking for something completely different, apparently. He studied art with Joseph Albers as one of his painting instructors.
Oh, wow.
Lucky man.
Right.
Black Mountain College.
Yeah. Black Mountain College.
Black Mountain College. Where is that, Zach?
North Carolina. Was.
North Carolina.
Which is really interesting because the work of Joseph Albers and the work of Rauschenberg is so different. Mm-hmm. I read something about how Rauschenberg, he attributed his ability to kind of go against authority to Joseph Albers.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, like Joseph Albers kind of taught him to question those kind of things,
for
which,
sure.
you know, maybe explains why their styles are so incredibly different. He's often referred to as a neo-Dadaist.
I like that.
I like that, too. It's interesting, though, because there is so much expressionism in his work, too, at the same time. So I feel like, yeah, like abstract expressionism meets Dada into, like, segueing into the world of pop art. There's a lot going on with Rauschenberg. He did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And our friend Zach knows a lot about those things. And he has a lot of feelings. So he's going to share them with us.
We're so excited to hear what he has to say.
So I'll go on the record as a non-Duchampian. I think Duchamp is boring. I think that
I understand not liking him, but boring is an interesting move.
How dare?
I think that Duchamp was just kind of like half thought out ideas that weren't like very interesting yet.
You know what, Zach? We don't agree. We do not agree, Zach Clark.
I don't agree or I don't disagree.
Oh, no. This
sounds like a Patreon episode.
This is a very hot take.
Speak into the mic, Mr. Zach Clark, and tell us about your bad opinions.
Plead your case, Mr. Clark.
No. But this is so, and I really hate that, like, because I love Dada, and I hate when Duchamp gets thrown in as, like, as a part of Dada, where, like, he was peripheral.
Oh, he's the father of Dada.
Bullshit.
We should do, because we've already done a Duchamp episode, which you should check out, but we could totally do a Patreon extra where we just debate the different sides of Duchamp. That would be pretty good.
Get into an extreme fight.
Which, the Combine, I am fairly certain the GOAT Combine is the first Combine, in air quotes.
Okay.
Is a painting that lays flat and then has a stuffed goat on top of it, and it's like a long-haired goat. And
the longer the hair on the goat, the better.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what I always say.
Black Philip. How
comes up again.
Hashtag Black Philip.
Every time.
Which I think bed might actually come before the goat.
Yeah, bed's really good.
Yeah, and so Rauschenberg had this way of making work that existed in painting space that came off the wall in a relief sort of way. And so the bed is literally the bed he slept on that he put into a frame and then painted over. And then the goat, which I wish I knew the name of it off the top of my head, which if one of you wants to Google that and find out the right answer, that'd be great. It is literally a full painting that sits on the ground, you know, parallel to the ground, and then has a full goat with a tire around the body in the middle of it.
Monogram. Yeah.
Monogram, thank you. To my understanding, was like one of the first paintings that really did that, where, like, is it a sculpture? Is it a painting?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know.
Yeah.
And
which I feel like it's interesting talking about him now, because when you look at visual art in the past, like, 10 to 20 years, mm-hmm. like, so much of that has been done.
Yeah.
So much, like, let's put sculpture and painting and collage together, and, like, so much mixed media has been done. It's, like, hard to imagine a moment where people are like, oh, that's new.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, totally.
Leonardo drew, which is arguably one of the bigger painters, quote unquote, today, but that might be a contentious point to take. Like, Leonardo drew's work is nothing but these sculptural elements that exist in a relief space. They are completely in a line with Rauschenberg's Combine and these paintings that come off the wall. There's currently one, it's the main entrance when you enter the De Jong in San Francisco, for Bay Area listeners.
Yeah.
It's just kind of scraps of things that he makes into this textural, like, they're not a sculpture, for sure.
Yeah.
They exist on the wall, but they aren't a painting either. But he paints everything, so it is really in this confusing space. Mm-hmm. And he, 50, 60 years into the future, like, that is a direct lineage.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Combine aesthetic. I don't know. For some reason, like, looking at Rauschenberg and thinking about Rauschenberg just sends me back to, like, being, like, a teenager and, like, going to, like, local art shows. I could be making this up, but, like, in the early 2000s, like, 2007 to like 2012-ish. Mm. I feel like there was so, like, I feel like everyone was doing that. They were like collage work and planting things on it. And like, it felt like I saw that all the time. And I thought it was dope. Like, definitely
not for sure
talking down to it. But I remember being younger and being super into that aesthetic. And I didn't even necessarily know where it came from. Mm-hmm. So I feel like now, like, learning more about Rauschenberg is like that. That's where that started. And I think what always pulled me to it, even if it wasn't actual Rauschenbergs, it was this like combine type aesthetic, was like what Rauschenberg was trying to do with a lot of his work, and what he did that was so influential, was this idea of bringing things that weren't beautiful necessarily and weren't high-minded necessarily.
Right.
Bringing in things that were dirty or bodily or like they were grittier.
Yes. Yeah.
And I definitely, like, as a 16-year-old identified with that. I liked the grit of it, and I thought it was very interesting.
And that is always, I mean, you can trace that back to so many different periods and so many different artists when, like, anyone brings in something that is, like, way more visceral and just not of like the kind of higher brow society, that is something that is just going to make waves.
Mm-hmm. Caravaggio in the bottom of the feet.
Dude, that is exactly what I was thinking of when I was
saying that. I like that. That's a great, because I love to think of history as very cyclical.
It's all pattern based, right?
Exactly.
It's like repeating cyclical things where, like, I mean, it always changes upon the context, of course.
But discomfort is discomfort.
Right.
And people respond to it the same way.
Yeah, and I think exactly. And throughout time, we keep, like, wrapping back around and bringing that into art in, like, a new way.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, just bringing a certain aspect of life and a kind of shared experience to, like, the greater stage of viewing. And that is always something that's going to be relevant.
Yeah. And I think bed's a perfect example of that. Because it elicits, like, ideas of bodily things, bodily experience.
Right,
and
exactly.
Bodily.
In, like, such a real, concrete way. Like, you can't get much, like, having a bed. You know? Like,
right?
It's literally his bed.
Yeah. Beds are such interesting places. Like, you think about all, like, the fluids and, like, all the, like,
gross.
You know what? That's true. There. That's true. The fluids.
They're fluids. Back.
In your bed. I'm here. I am here. And the reason why I'm jumping in is because.
That's true. There are fluids in your bed.
Gross. I don't remember who brought up the visceralness of Rauschenberg and that he paved the way for that kind of feeling within modernist art. And I hate Bruce Conners. His work makes me feel so gross.
Okay.
And just like, when you talk about visceralness, he's near the top of the list. But you bring that up right now, I was like, wait, Rauschenberg paved the way for Bruce Conners.
Yeah,
and I might be slightly diminutive to Bruce Conners by saying such a thing, but like it,
you can say what you want.
I now want to really think of Bruce Conners in a new way.
Yeah.
Oh God, his work makes me so uncomfortable, but it is visceral at its core, and you're totally right.
And I mean, that's just always going to be something that gets attention. And there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that Rauschenberg, like, deserves a lot of credit in that degree. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about the Bruce angle, but that is a good thing.
Yeah,
like, he made gross okay.
I know, dude.
In a really interesting way.
He made so gross.
No.
So okay.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
He was married to, and I'm a terrible person remembering her name.
Vile. Her last name was Vile. What was her first name? 1953.
Viola Vile. I made that up. That sounds like a superhero.
He was married while at Black Mountain College. to a female. Baby. And then it's baby. Really unclear if...
So to be clear, because we're throwing out a lot of names, Rauschenberg. Yes.
Robert Rauschenberg was married, and he had a divorce from his wife in 1953.
Can we get a name?
Okay, you know what? Don't give me a bad time.
She was also an artist, and the last thing we want is wife of Rauschenberg.
I know yeah. right? Oh, well, I didn't know that she was an artist. Mm-hmm. What the hell was her name? Y'all,
just Google wife of...
I'm doing it.
Okay. While Jen looks this up.
Damn it.
So
I'm doing it.
Robert and Cy Twombly became friendly, and he and Cy Twombly was given a grant to go make work in Italy for several years and invited Rauschenberg along with him.
Sure.
And he actually took photos the whole time he was there, which is a bit of a departure from what he's making. But also you could argue that what he was making before, he was, you know, an undergrad and he didn't have a style yet. And so Italy with Cy Twombly kind of helped him kind of figure out what he was making.
I bet. Fair. I bet that Italy with Cy Twombly helped him figure out what he was making. In the meantime, he was married to Suzanne Weil, W-E-I-L. They had a divorce in 1953.
They had a divorce.
I just wanted to make that known that while your boy, Bob Rausch, was having a great time with Mr. Twombly out there, he was married. So just know that.
They were on the outs for sure, but
just know that.
Yeah, no.
I feel like this is very quickly divulging to a friend's "we were on a break" argument.
Don't go too far into this. I just know that that's a thing. Anyway,
don't go too far.
Let's go back.
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
All right, so the conversation is going an interesting direction. We're at a pool party. We have a lot of great people here with great insight. We have so many great minds. And so we're going to pull in our babe Faith. You may know her from our alchemy episode, from our tarot episode. She was also our featured artist.
We love her.
She's great. And
did you
she's
hear that high five? That was crisp.
She's going to come in, jump in, and jump into this conversation. Faith.
Yes, hello. Hello. You may know me. I was working in the corner. Maybe 5 minutes ago, shaking my head at things Zach was saying. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then he That's ushered fair. Me over about a conversation we had a few nights ago. Do you want to clue us all in on this convo, Zach?
Well, so we were talking about how artists seem to have a attraction to other artists that they really respect and appreciate their work. There was an undercutting opinion that I had of like really great like accountants like are attracted to each other.
Okay. That is literally the last place
I know. No. And so it was more of a like, are artists weird or do people within a field like feel an attraction towards each other?
I think they spend a lot of time around each other. I think that's a huge part of it.
Oh, no. I don't think it's honest. That. I think it's more of the like, when I see an artist that like I have followed their work, mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, I want to know you biblically.
No, I 100% get that. And
is there like an account that's like, shit, these taxes so fresh.
Maybe. I could be speaking falsely.
I'm thinking about...
But I'm inclined to say no.
See, I'm thinking about like on Parks and Rec when the accountants like love Ben Wyatt so much.
Because he's so funny.
You're right. I love Ben Wyatt so much.
Me too. That's a good point.
I would marry him. Just get to like understanding like your core in a really unique way.
That's a very good point.
I think that's a part of it, but I think at least for me, there's like a viscerality and passion that's a part of art.
Yes.
That,
yeah.
You know,
that you don't get when you're an accountant.
It's like directly
because we need
accountants with sexuality.
But
you can't help it.
I agree.
So the question I posed, because we've jumped ahead a little bit to talk about how Robert Rauschenberg first had a relationship with Cy Twombly that was, I would argue, very formative in his creative practice.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine being a, like, 24-year-old that an artist 15 years your senior was like, hey, I got this residency and I'm being paid to go there. God. Come with me while I make paintings.
I would think I was the coolest shit ever.
It's pretty unreal. And then in the near future, he had a relationship with Jasper Johns.
Right.
And they really were kind of a powerhouse duo, but it was kind of an under-the-radar, like, duo. And so the question that I had posed to Faith based on our conversation from a week ago was like, if you because I'm not in a relationship with a fellow, with an artist. When you feel those feelings, when somebody starts making bad work, do you like stop being attracted to them, or does your attraction to them make you kind of blind to their work getting bad?
Well, and my take on this is if your attraction is mostly based on their work, then yes, you're not going to be attracted to them.
Yeah.
But if your attraction is only like a small sliver or just like less of a fraction than their personality, then no, you're gonna want to help them. You're gonna be like, babe, you're not on a right track.
Yeah, exactly.
Or this is how I feel about your work right now.
Baby, your shit is whack. Please get better.
Babe, I'm not going to leave you. I want to help.
I would say this because I love you.
If my lover was an artist, I would say, babe, your shit is whack, but I love you. Get that under control.
Can we put your shit is whack, please get better on a t-shirt?
Yes. Yes, we can. That's
I would also like to say that Paul's shit is never whack. It's always great, so that I don't have
Paul's amazing. Paul's great. And Faith has never had to tell Paul that his shit was whack because it was awesome. Paul is her
Where is
lover.
Paul? Is he just like...
In He's working on a shit that's not whack right now.
I just want everyone to know that Paul is Faith's lover.
You guys, this is worse than the bullshit episode.
No, stop it.
This is worse than the bullshit episode.
Stop it.
I also just want to take a second to say that Faith has a wonderful voice for podcasts.
She's beautiful. Yeah, her voice is amazing. Yeah.
In the headphones?
I've been very self-conscious about it, so that's
very nice. No, baby. You shouldn't be. You have a beautiful voice. So good. Wow. I want to be a lover.
Well, this is terrible.
We're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to reset.
I want to be a lover.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, and we're back, and we're going to get a little bit more on message for the second half of this episode. We're talking about Robert Rauschenberg. We're currently kind of entrenched in, he had many interesting love affairs within the art world. We chatted a little bit about him and Cy Twombly. We don't have a lot of information, but they were together and making art, and you know how that is.
Making love, making art.
Exactly. That's the way to do it.
It's a good way to do it.
I believe it. But now, a second heavy hitter of the art world that Rauschenberg had a bit of a relationship with, Jasper Johns.
So it doesn't seem to be like a common topic within the art world. It sounds like a lot of institutions tend to avoid talking about it. Zach, I don't know if you would be.
No, this is actually kind of an interesting topic in the fact that a lot of institutions kind of shy away from the relationship that Johns and Rauschenberg had.
Yeah, and we've kind of touched on this with like the idea of modernism and especially abstract expressionism being the like most masculine of movements and kind of this mentality. So maybe it has something to do with that. If it's like an American modernist movement, you know, you got to be masculine and everything that may mean,
especially at that time. Masculine definitely wasn't associated with being homosexual at the time,
but you know, as this was the preferred mentality, Jasper Johns and Robert Rauschenberg did have a 6-year or so relationship throughout the 1950s that Zach, I think, has some insight on.
More than just that was, I mean, that was really when Rauschenberg was making a lot of his combines and making a lot of what, if you were to Google Rauschenberg, like the work that comes up would be that period. And same with Jasper Johns, that the, you know, his Target paintings, those were the exact same time period. Yeah. And so really they were making what arguably is their most impactful artwork to date while in a relationship together, which I find to be a really interesting thing. But then also, for those of you, again, that have been in the Bay, there was a piece at the SF MoMA during his retrospective that was this really black and gray screen printed, one of his earlier screen printing paintings that was on loan from Jasper Johns, that was kind of a nothing painting. And it, I didn't think about it at all until I stopped to read the didactic that that's who it was from. Mm-hmm. And then really spent a lot of time trying to think about and really interested in the idea that, like, for fellow artists out there, you know that, like, how when you're really intimately connected with another artist, be it, you know, you share a studio space, mm-hmm. or you're romantically involved, what have you,
yeah.
that, like, they're... you have a deeper insight to the painting. And so this painting that just seemed like whatever, the fact that it was the painting that Jasper wanted,
yeah.
Was really something that made me want to think more about it and try to figure out, like, if this was actually more of a cipher into his work than I was willing to consider.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. And I just feel like that's not, well, I mean, it happens a decent amount in art history where you have different artists that are romantic partners or partners in not necessarily romantic terms, but it's something that I don't really have any personal experience with, so I can't be like, oh, yes. But it seems very profound. And it seems like something where when you look at the work of, like, two artists who are, like, very involved intellectually and emotionally and physically and all that, and you kind of, like, put those works side by side, like, you can draw a lot of really interesting conclusions from that.
I'm just reminded of, like, our conversation in the Women of Abstract Expressionism episode, yeah. when we talked about Lee Krasner, mm-hmm. and we talked about, like, they had a very intense relationship, mm-hmm. Jackson Pollock and Lee Krasner, and yeah. they both worked so hard all the time, and their work is clearly influenced by one another.
Right.
And unfortunately, we only hear about one of them exactly. so often.
Even but, though the others is better.
Yeah. There's really interesting crossovers both
totally.
Ways.
Totally. Because it's such an intense thing.
Yeah, like,
it's,
yeah.
It's such a, like, symbiotic, but, like, it's just a really interesting exchange of, like, ideas and emotion, and it comes out in these visual ways that, once you know the context behind it, you can really read into a lot of it and interpret a lot about it. But it's also something that's, like, a little bit obtuse at the same time because it's based off of relationships. And, like, you don't know unless you're in it, really.
That's yeah. what I was going to yeah. say. I feel like on one side, I want to say that, you know, creativity cultivates more creativity. Mm-hmm. So if you have yeah. two creative, artistic people who are doing that as a profession together, obviously that's going to perpetuate the idea of right. just thinking that way all the time. But at the same time, had Zach not known that that was from Jasper Johns, he wouldn't have looked any more into it. So there yeah. is that exterior kind of, like, we're projecting something right. in. Like, it's both. Like, how many things have we overlooked in history because we just didn't know the context? So mm-hmm. it kind of can work mm-hmm. both ways. And yeah. and then bringing up the Lee Krasner, Jackson Pollock thing, or sorry, Mr. Lee Krasner. Then
Lee Krasner and Mr. Lee Krasner. Yeah.
Then, yeah, then it kind of brings the whole gender dynamic, which is, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I don't even want to say interesting because it's almost just annoying because it shouldn't be a thing. The fact that Rauschenberg and Johns were two men, and so rather than talking about it in terms of their relationship, like, institutions just decide to, like, pretend it didn't kind of happen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's,
wait, so are you sort of suggesting that the avoidance of discussing their relationship is because there isn't a, like, dominant, sub-dominant?
Doesn't it kind of seem like it? I hadn't thought of
that's
it before this conversation,
I mean,
but that's how it's sounding as we're talking about it.
Definitely has something to do with marginalized groups yeah. because, I mean, you have yeah. both, like, the homosexuality angle and then the fact that you don't have this relationship of male and woman, which is talked about so often in regards to abstract expressionism. We've talked about this so many times, is, like, there's so many male-female, like, power couples in yep. abstract expressionism.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly. You have the dominant, subdominant. So I think it's complicated, but I think you're totally right. I think there's something going on there involving multiple marginalized groups
yeah,
that
dude.
Is creating an avoidance.
That's so
yes.
interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I don't even know how to create a hierarchy.
Do you need to take a break and think about it?
Well, no, I'm just thinking about a hierarchy of, like, Johns Rauschenberg. I mean, I know where I fall, yeah. but, like, that's arbitrary.
Right.
Maybe this is why they didn't want to do it, is they couldn't decide.
God, but what a, like, shitty dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, you can't
I
be
can't
two
imagine
equals
it was easy.
In a piece.
Yeah, no, totally. I can't even imagine that. I really can't, because that would be very, very difficult
to do in a healthy way from multiple perspectives.
Yeah,
Like one of the things that I, to like walk further down the path, I guess, one of the things that I do find really interesting about Rauschenberg in a way that I don't feel like was true for a lot of other artists of his time was he was so open about his collaboration, about how much information he took from other people.
Totally.
Like again, one of the pieces in the retrospective. There was this piece, Short Circuit, that was in the retrospective of the SF MoMA that he had, him and a bunch of other friends had applied for a show, and he was the only person who got accepted. So he made a piece that had a lot of these doors that were, again, were like entry points to the Combine that had tiny pieces from all of his friends, including a really tiny Jasper Johns Target that then was stolen.
That was stolen?
Yeah, it was stolen. So the one that's in the show, that like now that's part of the official piece, is a recreation that isn't even by Jasper Johns, by somebody else.
Sure.
Yeah. And
interesting.
And so that idea that he was really all about bringing his friends along.
Which is so nice, because that especially is something that you don't see like all...
Oh, do you have a little bug friend? I'm sorry.
He was crawling on my leg.
He looks like a combination of a red ant and a lightning bug. Yeah. I don't know what he is, though.
I think that he's been around
on the topic of bringing
for
your friends
thousands
along.
Of years.
Let's jump back in. Let's jump back
really
in.
Good, guys.
We were doing great.
We were talking about Rauschenberg's willingness to acknowledge his collaborations.
Okay. So I was listening to a podcast, actually, on the way here. I was listening to multiple podcasts on Robert Rauschenberg because traffic was a nightmare. Mm. And one thing they really talked about was the whole collaboration thing.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that he was very, especially when you look at the time period when he was an artist, like it was very much about being, you know,
an individual artist.
Exactly. Yeah. Abstract expressionism. Jackson Pollock like had an identity.
Oh, yeah.
And he was Jackson Pollock. And like, you know, even going back to like Pablo Picasso, like had an identity. It was very much.
Yeah. That like concept of the artist where it's all from his own mind.
Yes. Yes.
And it's all very independent. And so, no, I think that Rauschenberg deserves a lot of credit in the degree of like being in the mind of like collaboration,
and he was really working with other folks in a really interesting way. Like all of his screen printed work, which I would argue the combines were important, but his screen printed work is really what is kind of the most aesthetically celebrated of his work.
Yes,
and that like he was very upfront about the fact that like he learned to screen print from Andy Warhol. That he just came to the factory one day and was like, "Oh, this is interesting. I want to bring this into my work."
Exactly, and I mean, I feel like that is the really wonderful part about art, when artists are collaborating with one another and they're open to collaborating with one another. It's not always like that.
I also feel like it's just really interesting with Rauschenberg visually, because like we said, he was, you know, he created combines, basically. This underlying current of combination of ideas was so important. So like, I like that while he did that individually, he also turned it into the world of working with other artists and combining his ideas with other artists and creating something new. And that also speaks to all the different styles he worked in. Like we said, Dada,
I mean,
Neo-Dada,
super versatile.
Pop art, you know?
It's incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
How he wasn't limited to one kind of niche.
Yeah, definitely.
And literally all it takes is just dropping your ego. It's not like he really like did anything that revolutionary except just dropped his ego decided that his work was going to be his work no matter how like forthright he was about it. So why not just give credit to where credit's due and collaborate and make good art? Like
it's
not that hard.
Exactly. Do we want to talk about the most infamous of semi-collaborations?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this ties in really well to our iconoclasm / destruction of art episode. I think it came up very briefly.
An oldie,
maybe.
But a goodie.
Iconoclasm is really good, and I feel like it might get looked over, but Iconoclasm was like a really good episode.
Iconoclasm is also just like a very important topic, regardless of the time period that you're talking about. Because iconoclasm has been around for a long time, and it will continue to be around.
Exactly.
For long past we're alive.
Exactly. There's so many
it just is.
There's
yeah.
so many good stories in that episode.
No, totally.
So if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to the Iconoclasm episode. But that definitely, I agree, applies to one of his most well-known works. You know, it's definitely probably been talked about in your modern art 101 course. And it's Erased de Kooning, which is, iconoclastic, is that a word?
Of the iconoclastic nature.
Yes, it's definitely iconoclastic in some way. To give you a little background of the story, Rauschenberg was young. He was in his 20s, and he kind of had this idea, and he actually played with erasing his own work a few times.
Which is really interesting.
I know. He had this idea of, like, because he was really concerned with, you know, the big questions, like, what is art and all of that. He played with erasing his own work, and he just didn't get the results he wanted or, like, the feeling he wanted. So he got this idea, and he went over to de Kooning's house, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was in his 20s. De Kooning was a really well-known artist at the time, knocks on his door. Apparently, he was hoping...
Hello, sir.
Yeah, apparently he was hoping de Kooning wasn't going to answer, but he did answer.
I know that vibe.
Yeah, and Rauschenberg told him his idea, and de Kooning was into it. He's like, all right, let's do it. And so they go into, like, his studio and start looking through work, and there were a few different contenders. And de Kooning, like, pulled up different ones, and apparently at one point he pulled one up, and then he was like, no, not that one. It has to be something I would miss.
Oh.
Yeah. And then he found the image. We don't know how many erasers it took, but it was a drawing, and de Kooning erased the whole thing.
Rauschenberg erased the whole thing.
Rauschenberg erased the whole de Kooning drawing. And thank you for that. And then he, you know, kind of put it out there. And at first it didn't get much attention at all. Like, no one really thought anything about it. But over time, it became a little more scandalous and a little bit more of a big deal.
Right.
And then over more time, once we started having, like, art conservators with, like, X-ray power and shit, people started...
X-ray powers!
People started looking at the erased de Kooning to try and see what the drawing was underneath, and apparently de Kooning was not into that. And then it created some drama between the two of them, because de Kooning was like, this was between you and me, bud. Like, this was not, you know. And Rauschenberg just kind of, like, brushed it off and didn't really feel like that was part of the deal or anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's an incredibly widely talked about artwork, both in terms of, you know, the act of erasing it. Like, is that an artwork? Is that more of a performance? Like, what is that exactly?
It brings about so many interesting questions.
Is it a drawing?
Yeah.
I show it to my drawing students every semester.
Yeah.
To the befuddledness of all of them.
Yes.
And that's the point.
Isn't that the point? Straight befuddled.
Yeah. There is nothing but
you befud. Just don't know.
Befud all around.
You have to think about it.
Nat does not approve of the conjugation of that verb.
No, I love it.
No, I'm into it. I'm into it.
Quite the opposite.
She's befudded.
In the best of ways, I'm befudded.
Yeah, and it can be rather befuddling because the image, if you just look at it, it's an erased drawing. You don't see much of anything, you know. You have to know the story to get any of the background. And that's exactly what Rauschenberg was trying to do. He was asking questions about what equates to art and what makes art meaningful.
I was going to say, that's like my bread and butter. That's what gets to my soul, is kind of when you have to know some backstory. I don't know why, and I don't even want to, like, preach that to people, because if it isn't what you're interested in, I don't think it should be. But that's what I crave in art, is knowing more. Like,
yeah, I totally agree. And also just asking the big questions, which with this work, Rauschenberg is asking the biggest of questions. He's asking, what is art? What makes art? How can we make art? Like, big ass questions. And I love asking big questions. So I definitely appreciate that in this work as well.
Which that really kind of leads nicely into a lot of his work. I would argue his less famous and later career work. At one point, he moved to Florida. And because he was traveling so much, he didn't need to be in New York. He's a big enough name. He also just needed more space. You know, even in the 70s, when, you know, you hear about all these artists that are living in entire flats, he wanted warehouses. And by moving to Florida, he slowly bought property that all surrounded this beachfront property that he had, and just had junk kind of living there. And was started to do some really interesting projects with some interesting people. He did a project with NASA that was kind of figuring out, like, what can I make with art this way?
That's dope. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of traveling to India and other, at the time, third world nations, really trying to find like what was beautiful in these places. You could talk forever about the like potential problematics of this, but like him seeking out specifically very specific indigenous textiles of India and really trying to flip the paradigm of like the negatives of these developing worlds and how, but finding the beauty in them to then kind of make that into art. And he started to make this work that I used to really think was just dumb and I had no interest in, but recently have really come around on there's an ephemeralness and a looseness. And again, we could argue the appropriationness of it, but this trying to like bring a mainstream beauty to things that are otherwise disregarded by like the, you know, cultural elites, if you will, really ended up becoming some really interesting work, but then also at the same time making this really kind of lowbrow work that lived exactly behind it, like his work that The Hiccups, that was all these really tiny paintings, image transfers, whatever, that were all zipped together by like zippers that he found just in a fabric store. And so really kind of pushing this idea that Nat was just talking about of the like bringing beauty to unbeautiful things,
yeah,
that really has kind of been a overarching thing that we've been talking about.
Yeah, or I think even expanding what beauty can mean.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yes. But then at the same time, he was really doing this thing that I didn't know about until just recently, the ROCE, the Rauschenberg Overseas Cultural Exchange. That was this body of work that he was making that was, again, we're talking 70s, 80s, of working with developing nations to bring art installations there and bring these bodies of work there that were not necessarily in galleries, and trying to work with governments when he could, of going to create this kind of cultural exchange that is not dissimilar from a Fulbright or a Rotary, what we're doing today. But he was doing it completely on his own. Sometimes, like, the Chinese were not happy about it, but there were a lot of other Southeast Asian countries that actually really were celebrating, welcoming this American blue-chip artist coming to bring work. And he was really kind of about collapsing that hierarchy because of how much he had traveled and how much of the world he'd seen, and really kind of wanting to bring it all together in this really altruistic, if not flawed, but like really beautiful way.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. I think that's totally fair. I like that. Altruistic but flawed, mm-hmm. But like, what isn't, you know? Like,
yeah. True.
I like that. It's definitely complicated and worthy of further discussion, but I like the way you talk about mm-hmm. it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting direction that his work went in, yeah, for sure.
It's not fair to always draw such harsh lines between like things being like purely problematic. Like, there's a time and a place for saying like that is problematic, but it's not always the case. Sometimes there are these more gray areas where you have to do a little bit more of sifting through the intention.
The entire study of anthropology is a gray area.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Exactly. Great point.
And so many artists, like, you know, this is something going on right now, especially within America. There is this, like, artist's job is to be the critiquer.
Yeah,
and is to be the commentator.
Yeah.
And Rauschenberg seemed to have this really kind of optimistic feel about the world that, especially recently, I've started to find really refreshing.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
he, like, really kind of wanting to like close down borders and wanting to make connections.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think is really great.
He definitely was. I think connection is a great word mm-hmm. to associate with him.
Yeah.
He is definitely concerned with connection, which I totally feel you. Like, those are artists that I identify with and I understand, because I think in a greater sense, a lot of times art is just about making connections. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about making these bigger connections. And he did that on a lot of different scales. Yeah.
I mean, his whole career.
Right. Yeah. No, totally.
But yeah, Rauschenberg. Is there anything else you really want to get into about him?
He's a beautiful, wonderful soul.
Yeah.
We were trying to, like, honor him today.
Yeah, we're at a beach.
We tried.
We made signature Rauschenberg cocktails.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll put out the recipe. Don't worry about it.
We'll put the recipe
in our sources because it's academic.
Yeah, we'll put the recipe in our show notes for you.
I really love Rauschenberg.
He's just like he's a beautiful, beautiful guy.
Yeah, definitely. Did some cool stuff. Definitely.
He really did. And I think he deserves a lot of credit in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Which can be pretty unique for artists. I mean, there are plenty of things that we can praise practically any artist for, except for like Gauguin.
Yeah, except for him. He's not him.
I don't know. There's just like a lot of things that I really empathize with him on, and I really respect him for. Mm-hmm. That not necessarily all artists. I feel that.
Yeah.
Kind of degree of like collective respect for.
It's something about like some sort of like genuineness.
Yeah.
I think there's a better word because that's not a word. But
no, but I agree. But no, I agree.
Sincerity. There we go. Sincerity. Yeah. Not all artists are necessarily sincere. I feel like you can be a great artist without being sincere.
Yes.
And so when you come across a great artist that is also sincere.
And also, he just was always curious.
Yeah,
because even into his the end of his career work, when like you know, full bed digital printers.
Yeah,
when a 4-foot Epson printer came out, he figured out how can I do something new with this.
Yeah,
in a way that like I wish I knew.
Yeah.
What he would do with like a Rizzo today.
Right.
Like that medium seems so fucking prime for him, and it would just be beautiful.
No, absolutely. And I feel like more and more, the further I get along in my own life's journey, the more that I just value people in general who are curious. And I feel like, especially in a creative person that is curious, it's just such a wonderful combination. And it can really result in a lot of cool shit.
As seen in the work of Rauschenberg.
Curiosity, boom. Man. That's what it's all about.
Be curious. Like George.
George.
The
monkey. Curious George.
Come on, man.
But also be curious.
Curious like Bob.
Like Bob, yeah.
Be curious like Bob. Be
like
curious
Broush.
Like Pat. Be curious like George. Be curious like you.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Tattoo that on your body and send it to me.
Wait, can we do a couple of Art History Babe listener shout outs if you made it this far?
Yeah, of course. What do you got?
Can I say thank you to Allie Reed and Lizzie? Oh my God, let me make sure I get your name right.
This is the cutest.
I've got a little book here. I do.
He's got a little book.
This is
full circle. So we're talking about Great Hope. So thank you so much to everyone who is an Art History Babes listener who decided to be part of Great Hope. And the fact that we are going to be showing it in Tucson in August and in Monterey in the fall.
Yeah. It's just,
and I'm really hoping to show it in Dallas in next March.
Yeah.
Lizzie Blasingame, let's play Dungeons & Dragons. And I know there was another one, but I'm going to be a terrible person and not remember it. Thanks for listening to the show, being part of the collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks to you guys for letting me put my dumb ad about Great Hope. I only hope that the like inclusion and generosity that I try to perpetuate, Bob would be proud of.
You know,
I think he would.
I think he would.
I think he would.
I think
he would.
We both had tattoo lips once.
I used to want one because it faded, and I thought that was like cool and ephemeral.
Oh, dude.
I do love the ephemerality.
You know, ephemerality is so in right now.
Except, does now Black Panther make lip tattoos like overly trendy?
Oh, good question.
Oh,
this is an Art History Babes hot takes. Lip tattoos, cool or no longer cool because of Black Panther, which is definitely cool.
Yeah.
It's,
the movie itself is cool. It can't be argued. I almost cried multiple times
in that movie.
Dude, yeah.
If you haven't, you should go listen to our hot take on Black Panther. Yes. That was another good one. All right. Before we wrap up, we were going to talk about it at the beginning, but we didn't. Zach's our new feature artist.
Yeah.
And you should definitely check out our YouTube because we're going to have all sorts of fun stuff on there, like vlogs, and we're going to talk about books, and we're going to have all kinds of cool things, including a featured artist video with Zach talking about his work and giving you more details. But yeah, Zach Clark, our new featured artist.
At Zach Clark is Z-A-C-H.
Yeah, he's a Zach
Clark
with an
H.
Not a K. He's a H, not a K.
Fuck that.
But his information will be found on our website, arthistorybabes.com, as well as the limited edition work that he is currently working on as part of our featured artist collaboration. So be on the lookout for that for sure. Is there anything you'd like to say about that, Zach? Or
no, I'm really excited about it. It might be doomy. It might be dreamy. It might be both.
I like Doomy Dreamy. Yeah,
right? What? Oh, Doomy Dreamy is
Doomy and Dreamy is like
is perfect.
My state of mind.
Right? Like every day I hit those points.
Honestly, the dreams I've been having lately are so freaky. We can get into it later, but they're just like very dark but cool when I wake up and I'm like, Doomy Dreamy, this is
The dreams I've been having lately. So for some reason, I have been watching a ton of Gossip Girl lately.
Okay, that's in a totally different direction than I thought I was going to go.
Right? Yeah. Me too. I don't even know how it happened. Like, I really don't know how it happened.
XOXO.
Yeah. But as a result, my dreams have been super, like, dramatic Gossip Girl style soap opera dreams. It's ridiculous.
On the steps of the Met. Meet me there, bitch.
I had a dream last night. I don't even remember what was all happening, but I know I was rushing to get, like, a really nice dress to someone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was absurd.
Dreams I most recently fun. Had a dream that there were striped snakes in my yard. Cool. And Faith and Paul and Christina were also in my yard.
Sure.
And I was like, guys, there are snakes in the yard. They look like Shai Halud. Get out of here. And then and then they were like, no, it's cool. Take a picture. And I was like, okay. And I took my phone out of my pocket and I couldn't read my phone. And I was like, guys, we're in a dream. It's okay. You can hang out with the snakes now. And we just hung out in the backyard with these snakes because I knew it was a dream.
Lucid dreams, man.
Nice. That's dope.
That's where it's at.
Yeah. And Shai Halud.
Yeah.
All right. Gossip Girl.
And Gossip Girl.
XOXO. Shai Halud. Hashtag babes poolside.
You're welcome, everyone.
Quick listener mail to wrap this whirlwind of an episode up. This comes from Caitlin. Hi, Art History Babes. Very recently, I found your podcast on iTunes during a frantic search for educational/entertaining material to listen to on my 20-minute walk to class each day at the University of Ottawa in Ontario.
Yeah, Canada.
I find your episodes so, so funny and engaging, and many times I have ended up taking the scenic route just to listen longer. That's nice.
I mean, Canada's a beautiful country, so I don't blame
Bad Boys of the Baroque was a good episode.
Oh, my gosh. Particularly during Bad Boys of the Baroque, which is one of the first episodes I listened to. I'm actually writing as I am about to graduate from my undergrad, history and political science, in the next 2 weeks, and will no longer be able to put off deciding what to do next. I've been accepted to MAs in art history in England, Scotland, and Toronto.
Go, girl.
As well as law school here at home. It's time to face the music and make a decision.
Go abroad.
But I am worried that if I follow my academic passion to go on studying art history, I'll be taking a risk that doesn't pan out. I am a totally different person from when I came into university 4 years ago because of the people I've met, lessons I've learned, and opportunities I've seized. I'm just worried that the MA will not turn out the same way. I'm wondering if you are inclined to reply, if you have any insight to share about the doors your MA art history opened for you. Hope to hear from you. Very best, Caitlin.
Ooh, it's a loaded question.
It is but a loaded question.
Here's my answer.
I've got opinions too.
We got thoughts.
I think it's worth it. It puts yourself in a weird little niche where jobs are few and they are very competitive. However, I can't imagine not having done it. Like, it changed my life for the better. Like, legitimately. So I feel like if you have
we're
the
friends.
Right? We're all here. Mm-hmm. Poison Kate.
Poison Gate?
Poison Kate.
Boynton Case.
That's
Poison Kate.
I think it's Case in Point.
It's called
case
Pig Latin.
Case in Point.
I learned it in graduate school.
So I'm going to take over from Ginny here and say...
Don't you steamroll me. Well, no, go.
Okay.
No, I'm done.
I'm going to say that, A, if you, that, don't go to Scotland. And Toronto, I would argue, is my second favorite city in North America. Also, if you also applied to law school, you have the hustle to make your art history degree work.
Great point. Yeah, dude, yeah.
Because you're already a little crazy.
Right.
And roll with it.
And there are tons of cases that have to do with Holocaust restitution, repatriation in Canada and the States,
so good.
Where you have to know a lot about art and art history and also law.
Yeah.
And it's just like a beautiful confluence. So if you got that knack, like, do it.
Also, 100% agree with everything that's been said so far.
But also, it'd be cool to go abroad.
Yeah, well, but she already is in Canada. In
She's
Ottawa.
Canadian,
yeah, but going to Toronto is so cool. Well, I love Toronto.
Okay.
think we all agree England, Scotland, and Toronto, all great places. All so great you'll be solid
different
there.
Different order, but yeah.
You'll
it's
be
better
solid
than what
there.
We've got.
No, it's not. California's dope.
California's
I know.
Great.
Like, come on.
I know you're
right. I
hate
to admit it, but I'm willing to admit it on recording.
Yeah, California. Ooh. California is pretty dope.
California.
But so is England, Scotland, Toronto. So you have great options. I also just want to add in, I am on the side of don't ever make a decision based on fear.
Yeah.
Word. That was a high
or
five.
Or money.
Yeah. So yeah. Like if you
trust
know,
your gut.
I'm just going off this email, but if you know like you have a passion for art history, but you're just afraid, fuck the fear, man. Like you, yeah. And which is yeah. hard. I don't,
it is.
You know, it's a hard thing to do, but you can't make decisions based on fear because I think in my experience and a lot of people's experience, mm-hmm. they're not going to pan out. Like yeah. you have,
even if you get exactly what you want.
Yeah. You have to,
or you think you want,
you have to ignore the fear and say like, what do I really want? What, yeah. what makes me come alive? Just look at us, like what we're doing right now isn't exactly following any type of conventional path, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah,
like at all. There is no one who could walk in here and change my mind about what I'm doing, even though it's not making me a ton of money and even though it's not super conventional. Mm-hmm. And that's because I'm doing what makes me feel alive. So if you know that something makes you feel a certain way, do it.
Yeah.
Worry about it later.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be smart. You can plan ahead, but do what it is that you know you want to do and push the fear aside as much as possible.
And as Zach pointed out, it sounds like you already have the drive. Like you
exactly.
have that motivation and that drive to get you where you need to go. So just tap into that again and just keep going.
Just trust.
Like, you sound
trust.
Like you're doing the right thing.
Exactly. Just like do what you love, work hard, and just like trust that it's going to work out. That's my best advice.
It's the best advice.
Yes.
We all agree. We're all in consensus
art
here.
History.
Thank you so much, Caitlin, for writing in. If you have any questions, thoughts,
best of
anything.
Luck. You're going
to
be fine.
Yeah, definitely. Best of luck to you. If you have any questions, thoughts, anything, email us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was a silly one, but I think fairly informational
think
as well.
We had some really good nuggets in there.
I think
got
so,
real
too.
Emotional.
We did. Also, be sure to get on our YouTube. We're hitting that hard right now. So subscribe, like, comment, you know, all that business.
You get to see my moldy garage in no time.
Also, follow us on all the social medias. Check out our Patreon for bonus episodes, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting. You guys are seriously the best. We have the most amazing little community that we've created, and we love you so much.
I think Jen drowned in the hot tub. Yeah.
We need to go check on Jen. Yeah. So we're going to go do that. But
she's turning into a prune.
Bye.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
All right, we're going to get back on track, but before we do, I just want to clarify, if your shit is whack, make it better. The Art History Babes podcast is made possible by support from our lovely listeners via Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes to help keep the Art History Babes going and for access to bonus content.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.